Guys, we went over this last night. Primary Purpose Group has gone out and generously put this thing together this weekend at no charge to you. And as I said last night, these things can go up to $175 for the weekend. And this one is absolutely free. So what we would like to do in appreciation and to try and help them offset their expenses is we're passing a basket right now. And as it comes to you, if you could donate something to help offset their expenses, because it costs money to bring Charlie over, and for just it takes money to put one of these things on. So if you would, dig deep and give them a little support, will you?
Give till it feels good.
Give till it hurts. Did you bring a jacket for everybody?
Yes. Maybe it'd be a good time for us to check our cell phones again, because I'm sure people's had some texts and some calls. And Larry Boy and I are a firm believer that it is very rude to interrupt someone on the phone. So we really don't want to stop this big book study until you get done talking. So
and we will stop.
Yes, we'll stop. We sure will. Because it must be very, very important. Or you had already told your friend, I'm in a big book study today. I'll talk with you during the break. I'll call you. You don't have to call me.
Drew, will you do me a favor? Will you step to this box right here and push the power button and watch the screen? Go ahead and push it now. The power button.
Far right. You're right. Far right.
All right. Push it. Push it down. Okay, push it again. There you go. Drew, you may grow up to be an aeronautical engineer. All right. We are still in step one, guys. We are in chapter three, more about alcoholism. And this chapter, for those of you that don't know this, is written from the alcoholic's viewpoint. Okay? And it's kind of a fun chapter. If you enjoyed any of your escapades before, you know, you ended up in the hospital with a hoosegow, Glenn. Just saying.
Okay, some more message from people who have recovered through our program of recovery. Most of us have been unwilling to admit that we're real alcoholics, because no person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows.
Notice that they made a reference there to the disease, the mental obsession and the allergy of the body.
Therefore, it's not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain, in other words, unsuccessful attempts to prove we could drink like other people.
They're going to use the words in here, and all these words mean the same thing. They're going to use the word obsession. They're going to use the word delusion. They're going to use the word illusion, and they're going to use the word insanity. So let's break down insanity. If sanity is wholeness of mind, we're all pretty smart people. Insanity would mean you don't quite fit the bill. So, but they all mean the same thing. Illusion, delusion, obsession, insanity.
The voices in Charlie's head keeps talking about the idea that somehow, someday, I will control and enjoy my drinking. And that has been the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. That's the lie I listen to and I believe in. The persistence of this illusion or lie is astonishing.
You know, Charlie just used the term control and enjoy. I can control my drinking. I've done it. Anybody ever control their drinking? How about enjoy? Have you ever enjoyed it? The problem with us is you can't get that going at the same time. You know, if I'm controlling, I ain't having no fun. You know, we were in New York. I don't know if it was when we were just up there, but there was this girl from Jamaica. She says, I'm not sure if I'm an alcoholic. I said, well, let's talk about that a second. I said, when you drink, how much do you drink? She says, all that I can get in. I said, well, let's say it's Friday night and you go out with your girlfriends after work. How much do you drink? She says, oh, I have a couple of glasses of wine. I said, a couple of glasses of wine so you can control it. She says, yeah, but I get the hell away from them and go home and all bets are off. I said, so when you get home, you just drink until you pass out. She said, oh, yeah. I said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Control and enjoy. I can control it. I can. And I can enjoy it, but I can't get those two things going at the same time. If I'm enjoying my alcohol, you don't want to be around me.
Because many type 3 drinkers pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. This is a very, very important paragraph I'm about ready to read. You might want to put you a little star there, because here's some clear-cut direction. We learned we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery.
So there's your first step. We saw bills, but this is your first step right here.
Here's the directions. So what this thing is saying is, step one is a yes or no answer. I don't know how many years it takes to answer the question. Many ensue it into the gates of insanity and death. And we have some people in Alcoholics Anonymous who's digging the hole and opening the gates for them. The delusion or the lie that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed.
That's some subtle language. Again, we heard it a couple of times from different people this weekend about sponsors have their sponsees doing all kinds of ludicrous things. Writing a first step. I don't see anything about writing here. Do y'all see, is it in your book that you write out a first step? It's as simple as your ass kicked. Yep, one.
Yeah. Step one, listen folks, step one does not have to be dissected. Step one is the admission of past experiences. You don't have to learn how to do step one in Alcoholics Anonymous. We just admitted that all of this has happened to me before I ever got here. So step one is admission of your past. It's not a new train of thought. This is my track record, and I'm just admitting to it. You say there's the requirement to be in this little game is a desire to stop drinking. I have it. But the only problem is I don't know how to not drink. I don't know how. So I fully concede to my innermost self, way down deep in here, that my past has brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can take step one. That's all step one is the admission of your past. That's all it is. You are the only one who can say, yeah, my past says I'm powerless over alcohol. Not me, if you choose me to be your sponsor. I can kind of listen to your story and kind of say, yeah, boy, you quack like a duck and you walk like a duck. So I could almost say you're a duck. But what I say has absolutely no bearing whatsoever. Me calling you an alcoholic, it doesn't work.
It's like calling you a school bus and expecting your doors to open up. Just call me a fire truck, don't make me one.
And if you're a type 2 drinker or a type 1 drinker, sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings will a bit more make you an alcoholic than sitting in a chicken coop is going to make you a chicken. You know?
This next sentence says, the delusion or the insanity that we are like other people presently, maybe, or it has to be smashed. Not put aside or what, it has to be smashed. Because we are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. That's one of many descriptions.
We know that no real alcoholic type 3 drinker ever recovers control.
Notice the word ever is in italics. Ever. It gets worse.
All of us felt that at times we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization.
When he reads that term right there, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, does it bring an event in your life up, a memory? And you're usually, it's one of embarrassment, shame, remorse. You get it, don't you, honey? I do, and I'm not gonna go there, but it was a holiday event. And every time he reads it, every time, I go back to that day. And I don't ever wanna live that again. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization.
We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type 3, are in the grips of a progressive illness.
And you want to highlight this next sentence.
Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better.
We get worse because our bodily organs, our vital organs age. They become less and less capable of handling the intoxicant we're putting in. Does this make sense to you? It's going to get worse. The allergy gets worse. Because you can't handle alcohol now. I know that doesn't set right with you, but if you're alcoholic, you just don't dissipate alcohol the way a normal body does. And it gets worse because the organs age and become less and less capable.
Yeah, this is where, you know, we're talking about people in here who have not taken the step. This chapter is about people who are just coming in. And we're offering them our experience. You know, it's going to get worse, never better. My sponsor, David Schaffner, has told me two things to do in 18 and a half years. And he told them to me the first night. He said, Charlie boy, you're going to have to quit fighting alcohol because you're going to lose every time. And you better quit messing around with God because you're way out of your league. That's the best 12-step call a person could do to a type 3 drinker. Let's jump over to page 31, the first full paragraph.
Despite all we can say.
Many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they're in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule. Therefore, non-alcoholic.
You might want to highlight that, and in your margin, in my book, it says, I'm going to prove myself unique. You don't get it. My case is different.
Yeah.
You ever done that?
Yeah. I'm really only a type 2 drinker. You know, that's really me. I do have choices. Oh, good for you. If anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman.
How do gentlemen drink?
I don't know, Larry. Boy, what do you keep asking me?
Well, you take your hat off to them.
Well, we should take our hats off to you. Heaven knows we've tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people.
You know, you hold that one finger up.
Is that how other people drink?
That's how gentlemen drink.
Oh. After you take your hat off.
Yeah, and then, you know, down at the bottom of the page, we're going to go over test question number one on the allergy of the body. You know, if you're a sponsor or a sponsee and you're on this path and you got a guy that kind of gal comes up to you and says, you know, I just don't know if I'm alcoholic. Tell them to read this question. Bottom of page 31, what does it say, Chuck?
Because we do not pronounce any individual as alcoholic, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. Step over to the nearest bar room and try some controlled drinking.
How often do you do that?
Well, try to drink and stop abruptly.
Yeah.
You know, it's 4 o'clock, time to go home, watch Judge Judy. Try it more than once. Shoot fire, it won't take long for you to decide if you're honest with yourself about it. Spiritual principle is step one, honesty. It may be worth a bad case of the jitters if you get full knowledge of your condition.
We were not a glum lot one night, and a friend of mine, Joyce, walked up to the table. She'd been going to the Al-Anon side of the deal, and she came up to me after me, and she says, you know, I may be going to the wrong room. I said, really? She said, yeah, I think I might have a problem with alcohol. I said, well, read this. She said, really? I said, yeah, go try it, stop abruptly, try it more than once. So the next week rolled around, she walked in, she looked like somebody had beat her ass. And I said, so, how you doing? She says, oh. I said, how'd that test go? Ooh, not so good. I said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I loved it.
Did we have a question?
I was going to say, I'd say heaven again. I don't know what it means.
Heaven?
Yeah, something different the third time.
What's wrong with heaven, man?
That's what Kevin said while he was mad about talking about God. I mean, wait, I don't know.
We don't know either, dude. We're puzzled.
I promise you, I was not around in 1937 when they wrote this book. So it is not my prerogative, nor is it my place to rearrange the word. This came from the people that came before me. And I just don't fight it. I just don't fight it, you know. So we're not trying to be obtuse when we say, you know, we don't know. We're not giving you a smart answer. Because we didn't write this book. Great. I don't want you to be uncomfortable, but if you are, there's a step forward, you know. Hey, that's key. That's key. We're on the same plane.
We're going to be talking about this guy. We call him Exceptional Man.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about four different examples of alcoholics. And these cats, I got to tell you, I hook up with about all of them. This is a man of 30. We're talking about the second full paragraph on 32.
A man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree drinking. He was very nervous in the morning after these bouts and quieted himself with more liquor.
Now, you know what that is. He goes out and gets tripped up, and then he has a hair of the dog. That's what they're talking about.
But he's ambitious to succeed in business and saw he could not get nowhere if he drank at all. Once he started, he had no control whatever.
Sounds like an alcoholic, doesn't
so
it?
So he's kind of powerless over alcohol. His track record shows this. So he makes up his mind that until he had been successful in business and had retired, he would not touch another drop.
Can you imagine this guy's a full-blown alcoholic and he ain't drank in 25 years? During this dry spell, you walk up to him and say, hey, Bob, how you doing? Fine! Great! Fine! Bob, just drink.
That's what I was telling you.
Just drink, dude.
An alcoholic with no problem recovery and it's not drinking, you better give him a wide berth. You know? If you want to be scared of somebody, you be scared of this dude.
Yeah.
You know? Because death means absolutely nothing to him. He's worshiping his money god. And nothing gets in his way of him and his money god. An exceptional man. He remains bone dry, not cold sober, bone dry, for 25 years.
You couldn't light a cigarette around this guy. He'd go up in flames.
He is a fire hazard. And retired at the age of 55 after a successful and happy business career.
I don't know about that happy. I might take exception with that.
Well, he's happy because he's doing it his way.
Yeah.
You know, his misery is just part of the price you pay. That's it.
And he fell victim to a belief which practically every alcoholic has, that his long period of sobriety and self-discipline had qualified him to drink as other men. The problem is, he doesn't know how to drink like other men. So what did he do, Charlie?
Well, out came his carpet slippers and the bottle.
And we're kind of visual. Here comes this naked man with carpet slippers and a handle jug of Jack.
And he sits down in that Broy Hill leather chair, kicks his feet up, and in 2 months he's in the hospital.
Huh.
Puzzled and humidified. That's another treatment they get.
That's right. That's where they just blow that steam up their ass. I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. I'm sorry.
So he tried.
Sometimes I just don't have control. You know, there's no filter.
He tried to regulate his drinking, and for a while, making several trips to the hospital in the meantime. Then, gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not.
Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. He could buy anything. He had enough money to burn a wet dog, but every attempt failed.
All that money he acquired.
Yep, he couldn't buy his way out of this one.
Couldn't buy his
way out. A robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years. Because why? We talked about the progressive nature of the disease. His organs had aged over 25 years. He's pouring in the same amount of liquor he was doing when he was 30. He's 55 now. And all of a sudden his body's saying, dude, I can't handle this, and it killed him deader than fried chicken.
I don't know if anyone in this room knows this example of someone. If you stay in Alcoholics Anonymous long enough, he'll show himself.
Yep.
This case contains a powerful lesson. Most of us have believed that if we were to remain sober for a long stretch, we could therefore drink normally. But here's a man who at 55 years found he was just where he left off at 30. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we're in a short time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservations, doubts, or limits of any kind, nor any lurking or hidden notion that someday we will be immune or not affected to alcohol.
95% of the meetings that we attend, that person, and you're probably in this room today, you've got that lurking notion or you got that reservation that you ain't like us. New Year's is coming up and you always have a glass of champagne. You go out on that roo-rah on New Year's. You're going to show us, by God, that it's going to be different this time. And that lurking notion lives right back here. And you're the only one that knows it. And I hope that you don't have to do that, but, you know, a lot of us do. We're going to flip over to page 34, top paragraph. This is test question number 2 for the obsession of the mind.
Is there any questions on test question number 1? Test question number 2. This is for willpower and the obsession. As we look back, we feel we've gone on drinking many years beyond the point where we could quit on our willpower. If anyone questions whether he has entered this dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for a year. If he's real alcoholic, type 3 drinker, and very far advanced, there's scant chance of success. In the early days of our drinking, we occasionally remain sober for a year or more, becoming serious drinkers again later. Though you may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential alcoholic. We think few to whom this book will appeal can stay anything dry like a year. Some will be drunk the day after making our resolutions, most of them within a few weeks.
And then we're going to skip over to the first full paragraph on 35, and the book's going to ask us what sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink. Dr. Silkworth, over in his opinion, said that we were restless, irritable, and discontented. That's the sort of thinking that dominates us and drives us. It's a form of insanity.
Friends who have reasons. Yeah,
yes.
I just want to make sure. So question number 1 is the test for the allergy.
Yep.
And test number 2 is the test for the obsession.
Obsession.
And trying to control the obsession by willpower. Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree, which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why in the world does he? Of what is he thinking? Now they're going to give us an example of test question number 2.
This is a buddy of ours. We're going to call him Jim in the book. His real name was Harlan Spencer, and his story was in the book called The Another Prodigal Son. Yeah.
He was in the first edition, or you can get that new book set out by GSO, Experience, Strength, and Hope, which has all of the personal stories of all four editions in them. So it's a great place to, you can check them all out. You know, if you're sitting in a book study, somebody throws out a name that was in the second edition, you can go home and check it out. You know, it's great. But we're going to try to stay in the black here, and we'll do what they say. Our first example is a friend we should call Jim.
Y'all gonna love Jim.
Oh, Jim's a man and has a charming wife and family. Now, old Jim inherited a lucrative automobile agency.
His old man owned a big old Ford store downtown, and when he passed away, he left it to Jim.
And Jim had a commendable World War record.
Boy, I tell you what, he fought for our country, did a great job.
And Jim's a good salesman.
Sell ice to Eskimos.
Everybody likes old Jim. Mm-hmm. He's an intelligent man, normal so far as we can see, except for a nervous disposition.
Oops, you don't want to come up on sneaking up on Jim and spooking.
Jim's a little quick.
I tell you what, you spook Jim, he'll knock you the hell out.
And Jim did no drinking until he was 35.
He was thirsty for all that time, though, you know.
You know, and in a few years, he came so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed.
Every time he'd go out and drink, he'd whip somebody's ass and they'd lock him up.
Yeah, he was even whipping the policeman.
I'm going to tell you what, he left the fight and get drunk.
And leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. Now, we told him what we knew about alcoholism.
We told him about the first step.
And the answer we had found. We
told him about the second step.
And old Jim made a beginning.
He took the third step.
His family was reassembled. And he began to work as a salesman for the business he had lost through drinking.
He had drank and fought and got locked up so much, he lost Jim's Ford store. And now he has to walk across a gravel lot to that trailer house where they sell the used cars.
No warranties.
No warranties, as is.
Well, all went well for a time.
But
old Jim failed to enlarge his spiritual life.
He didn't proceed after making that third step decision. He didn't take 4 through 12.
And to his consternation, he found himself.
Consternation is horror or amazement.
Found himself drunk a half a dozen times in rapid succession.
And you know, when he drinks, he fights. A half a dozen times.
Now, how long should you do 12 step work? On each of these occasions, we worked with him, reviewing carefully what had happened.
Jim, what happened to you, son? Have you got that four step wrapped up yet? No.
That burned. Jim was just here 3 days ago.
But he agreed he was a real alcoholic and in serious condition, so he recommitted to the first step.
He's living in the problem.
There you go.
He knew he faced another trip to the asylum if he kept on.
Moreover.
And moreover, old Jim would lose his family for whom he had deep affection.
Wife and the girls are going to be gone. They're leaving him. They're done with him.
I would lay down in the middle of I-285 for that, those girls.
I'm going to tell you what. Now, this first paragraph right here is normal, sane thinking. If you want to bracket it, this is normal, sane thinking right here.
Yet, he got drunk again.
Yep.
So we went back again and asked Jim to tell us exactly what had happened.
Here he goes.
And here's the story. I came to work on Tuesday morning. I
wonder where Jim was at on Monday.
I remember I felt irritated as I was walking through that gravel lot, and I had to be a salesman for concern I once owned.
He ain't happy about that. He's selling used cars. He used to be behind that big desk, that big mahogany desk.
I had a few words with the boss.
Now, I'm going to tell you. Boss probably said, where were you at yesterday, Jim?
But nothing serious. Whoa, Jim. When you have words with the boss, it's serious. So quit blowing smoke. Then I decided to drive to the country to see one of my prospects.
Normal, sane thinking for a car salesman. You know, that's where all the prospects for cars were at out in the country.
Yeah, standing on that dirt road, selling watermelons, waiting for Jim to come by so they could buy a used XLT.
That's it.
On the way, I felt hungry, So I stopped by a roadside place where they have a bar.
Normal, same thinking for a hungry car salesman out in the country. They've got a bar, but they make these bologna sandwiches.
That home cooked, I mean that home sliced.
It's thick sliced fried bologna, man.
And the dadgum cheese is about that much too.
Tell you what,
white bread.
Yes, sir, buddy.
Oh, man, at the Dew Drop Inn, I believe that's where I'm going to eat lunch.
But he said, I had no intention of drinking. I just wanted a bologna sandwich.
So I just thought I'd give me one of those bologna sandwiches. I also had a notion that I might find a customer for a car in this place.
That's where they hang out.
Jim?
They hang out in there.
He's been sitting over at the corner since 8 o'clock this morning hoping Jim will show up with a used car. That's where I'm buying me one today, by Cracky. Which was familiar, for I'd been going there for years. I'd eaten there many times during the months I was sober. So I sat down at the table and ordered me a bologna and cheese sandwich and a glass of milk.
Normal, same thinking for a hungry car salesman.
Still no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk.
Normal, same thinking for a really hungry car salesman out trying to sell a car in the country.
And but somebody hits the switch.
Look out, because here comes some squiggly writing. This is abnormal, insane thinking.
Suddenly. The thought crossed my mind that if I was to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach.
Abnormal, insane thinking.
I mean, bologna will sop up anything. So I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk.
Of course you did.
Well, now I vaguely sense I was not being any too smart.
But?
Well, I just felt assured I was taking whiskey on a full stomach.
That makes sense to me.
Man, shoot.
And the experiment went so well, I ordered another whiskey and poured it into more milk.
There you go.
What happened? The allergy had kicked in. He didn't have a choice. Bologna and whiskey's going real good at this point.
Yes, indeed. That white bread, it does good.
Didn't seem to bother me, so I ordered another.
There you go. Now we're three deep in it.
I started one more journey to the treatment center for Jim.
Now here was the threat of commitment, the loss of family and position, and to say nothing of that intense mental and physical suffering which drinking always caused him. He had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic.
He knew about the first step, he knew about the powerlessness, and he knew about the unmanageability.
He totally took step one. Yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor for the foolish idea, the obsession, that he could take whiskey if only mixed it with bologna.
Yeah.
Now, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else?
All right, we're gonna take another example. It's gonna be the second full paragraph on 39. This fellow's name in the book is Fred, but his real name was Harry Brick, B-R-I-C-K. He was an early member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're gonna love Fred.
Fred's a partner in the well-known accounting firm. His income's good, and he has a fine home. He's happily married, and the father of promising children of college age. He's so attractive by personality that he makes friends with everyone.
Everybody loves Fred.
If ever there was a successful businessman, it was old Fred. And to all appearance, he was stable, well-balanced individual. Yet, he's alcoholic.
Oops.
Now, we first saw Fred about a year ago in the hospital where he had gone to recover from the bad case of the jitters.
Now, not just the jitters, the bad case.
Yeah.
He's in four-point restraints and jitters.
How do you fill that out on the mission slip? How many T's and jitters?
That's right.
It was his first experience of this kind, and he was much ashamed of it.
Something you need to know about old Fred, and you'll pick it up as we read his story. He is a self-made man. He don't need your help by God on nothing. He's got this.
And far from admitting he was an alcoholic.
He don't need your damn help, trust me.
Old Fred told himself he came to the hospital to rest his nerve.
There you go.
That's the reason I'm in here.
Yeah.
The doctor intimated strongly that he might be worse than he realized. For a few days, he was depressed about his condition.
You get depressed like that when you're in four-point restraints.
Yeah. He said, you know, this may have something to do with all that drinking you're doing.
Just let me get up out of here.
What are you doing talking about my drinking? That ain't got nothing to do with it. He's made up his mind to quit drinking through self-will altogether. It never occurred to him that perhaps he could not do so. And in spite of his character and standing, Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic.
I will not be one of them.
I do not want what you're peddling.
You can take your first step in this, much less accept step two spiritual remedy. Take those two and put them where the sun don't shine.
But nevertheless, we told old Fred
about step one,
what we knew about alcoholism.
He was interested in that.
And conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but he was a long way from admitting he could do nothing about it himself.
So you can take that step two down the road.
Like Roland Hazard, he was positive that his humiliating experience plus the knowledge he had acquired would keep him sober for the rest of his life. Self-knowledge, that'll fix it.
Yeah, let's see how that works out.
I got her now, Doc. Thank you. We heard no more from Fred for a while. Then one day we were told he was back in the hospital. Well, imagine that. This time he was quite shaky. He soon indicated he was anxious to see us.
Call them fellas from A&A. I got shakes over here and they made me 4-point restraints.
Now the story he told us this time was most instructive, for here was a chap absolutely convinced he had to stop drinking, who had no excuse for drinking, who had exhibited splendid judgment and determination in all his other concerns, yet was flat on his back nevertheless. So let's let Fred tell you about it. I was much impressed with what you fellows said about alcoholism, and I frankly did not believe it would be possible for me to drink again. I'd rather appreciate your ideas about the subtle insanity that precedes the first drink. But I was confident it could not happen to me after what I'd learned.
And here, I love this. I reason I wasn't so far as advanced as you fellas. I'm not as bad as y'all.
That I had been unusually successful in licking my other personal problem. Shoot, I used to be a nail biter. Somebody said something about it, I don't bite my nails no more.
There you go.
And that I could therefore be successful where you men had failed. I thought I had every right to be self-confident, that it would be only a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on guard.
Well, how'd that work out there, Charlie?
Well, first, I had a choice, see. I had a choice. Every day I got up and chose. In this frame of mind, I went about my business for a time and all was well. I had no trouble refusing drinks.
And I started telling myself that lie.
And then again, I began to wonder if I had not been making too hard work of a simple matter. One day, I went to Washington to present some accounting evidence to the government bureau. I'd been out of town before, so during this particular dry spell, there was nothing new about it. Physically, I felt fine.
Everything's looking good.
Neither did I have any pressing problems or worries. My business came off well. I was pleased and knew my partners would be too. It was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon.
Everything, it just couldn't be better. I made a buttload of money. Everybody loves Fred, but here's some squiggly writing coming. Let's see what happens.
Well, after the day, I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed for dinner. I put on my pretty clothes.
Yeah, looking good. I'm Fred Almighty.
Yeah. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room,
I told myself a lie.
Because that thought came to mind, it'd be kind of nice to have a couple of drinks with dinner. That's all, just a couple of drinks.
Just a couple, nothing more.
Nothing more. I ordered a cocktail and my meal.
I love, in Fred's story, he tells you how many drinks he has. I ordered a cocktail. And then what happened?
Well, I ordered another cocktail.
There you go.
And after dinner, I decided to take a walk.
I wonder where he went.
He went to the ATM machine.
There you go.
Then I returned to the hotel and it struck me, you know, a highball would be fine before going to bed.
Or an eight ball.
Or bed. So back to the ATM machine. And I stepped into the bar and had one. I remember having several more that night and plenty the next morning.
So he went to bed and he had several. He went to the ATM machine a couple of times. He gets up and he's back at it. He's had plenty more. And then he says, I have a shadowy recollection of being in an aluminum tube rocketing through the air, bound for New York, and finding a friendly cab driver at the landing field instead of my wife. Fred is probably one of them cats like my brother that like to get tanked and get on the phone about 3 o'clock in the morning and call our relatives and tell them about them, their... Okay. Good. My brother liked to call people up, our relatives, in the middle of the night, and he would tell them all sorts of provocative things, like the people that were calling him their son were really not his parents, you know, stuff like that. So Fred is probably like that. He probably called her up and wore her out about her mummer and them, and she says, I'm not picking your ass up tomorrow. And so he finds a friendly cab driver at the landing field instead of her. And it says, the driver escorted me about for several days. He's in New York in a cab.
See, and he lives in Miami. And this cab driver is saying there is no Palmetto Drive here in the Bronx. And he said, just keep driving. We'll find it. I know it's around here somewhere. I know little of where I went and what I said and what I did.
I love it. He said he don't know where he went and what he said or what he did. And then came the treatment center with the unbearable mental and physical suffering.
You know, I remember somebody asked me, Charlie, you drunk again? And I said, no, still. Now, as soon as I regained my ability to think, bowel control.
That it's ability to think comes right after bowel control.
I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time, I had no thought of the consequences at all. It's just that insidious lie that we can believe. I had commenced to drink as careless as though cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesized or told of the future to me, that if I was an alcoholic, a type 3 drinker, the time and place would come and I would drink again.
So if he had an alcoholic mind, they're talking about the obsession of the mind. If you've got that, Fred, you're going to drink again because you're not treating it. You're not accepting step 1 and step 2.
Those guys in AA said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. How trivial is there's no reason for me to drink? Somebody shoots one across the bar and I say, sure. Well, just that happened, and more, for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. No, you ain't gonna weigh the consequences. It's time to drink. The obsession's there, and the obsession's gonna win out. It's gonna do it every time, Charlie, every time. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw the willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strong, strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly, there's that word, defeated. Well, I knew then, and it was a crashing blow. Now, two of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous came to see me. They grinned, which I didn't like so much.
You ever go to see anybody in a spin dry and they're locked down in 4-point restraints and you smile at them? I hate that shit.
Yeah. That nurse didn't tie your dress up real tight. And you're out there exposed to the world. And they walk in and say, how's your mama and them? And then they asked me if I thought myself an alcoholic and if I were really lit this time. Well, I had to concede to both propositions.
So they asked him about the first step.
They piled on me heaps of evidence to the effect that an alcoholic mentality such as I had exhibited in Washington was a hopeless condition. They cited cases out of their own experience by the dozen. This process snuffed out the last flickering conviction that I could do the job myself. Then, they outlined the spiritual answer.
They talked about step two.
And a program of action, which 100 of them had followed successfully. Though I'd been only a nominal churchman, their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow.
But
the program of action, now, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. It meant I would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out of the window.
The main one is I'm Fred Almighty. That has to be crushed.
Remember Larry Boyd talked about the whole process is change? That's what he had to come to terms with. I got to change. And I don't know how to change. It's not easy. But the moment I made up my mind to go through with the process.
That's third step decision right there. The moment that I made up my mind to go through with the process.
I had the curious feeling that my alcoholic condition was relieved.
Over in, when we get to the third step, it says sometimes an effect, a very great one, was felt at once when you take the third step decision, and that's what he just alluded to right there. The moment I made up my mind to go through with the process, comma, I had the curious feeling that my alcoholic condition was relieved, comma, as in fact it proved to be.
Yeah. This happened in Fred's mind. Bill Wilson laying in that bed, God showed himself to him in the form of a light. You know? Different ways, but the results are the same. Quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems.
All, not some or most. Please underline that.
I have since been brought to a way of living infinitely more satisfying and, I hope, more useful than the life I lived before. My old manner of life is by no means a bad one, but I would not exchange its best moments for the worst I have now. I would not go back even if I could.
So that's Fred. We're going to get down to the last paragraph on 43.
My sponsor has 26 and a half years of sobriety, and he will honestly tell you there's only one part of the 164 pages that he's memorized. And he told this to me. We read this paragraph the first night, and I'll talk about it tonight. But listen to the words. Time does not have a factor in this. It says once more, now here's an ominous warning, folks. The alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases. Neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. It does not say your first 30 days of sobriety, your first 6 months of sobriety, your first year of sobriety, your first 26 years of sobriety. It says at certain times. At certain times. It's going to happen, Charlie. It's as sure as God made little green apples, it's going to happen. And without God in your corner, you will drink again.
Y'all have any questions on step one? We have just concluded it. You're all good? All right, we're going to come back at about, according to that, about 25 till.